I think we're live, or we're getting there. Still
I
saying
think we
setting up,
are.
but here we go. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Angie Atkinson, and I'm here with the lovely and talented Dana Morningstar for our usual Tuesday afternoon live stream. I hope everyone is doing well. Dana, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to
Always
be here.
Happy to have you. And today we thought we would talk about, oh, wait a minute, before I get too far into that, while we're waiting for everyone to pop in, let me just remind you that if you don't know Dana, she is from Thrive After Abuse here on YouTube, the channel Thrive After Abuse, and thriveafterabuse.com around, and Thrive After Abuse around the internet.
Yes. Oh, your sound cut out. I can't hear you.
Jeez, sorry.
There we go. Okay, I can hear you now.
Thank you. We do these streams every week in order to support our communities, and we alternate channels. So make sure if you haven't subscribed to one of us or both of us, do it now, and you'll be notified when we go live. All right. So, Dana, what are your thoughts on signs of gaslighting or gaslighting in general? Or what? Let's start with this. How would you define gaslighting?
Okay. Gaslighting. Well, the term comes from an old movie that was made in the 40s and starring Ingrid Bergman. It's a can be kind of a triggering film, but kind of long story short. So in the film, spoiler alert, I guess if you haven't seen it, this woman marries a man who turns out to be the jewel thief who murdered her aunt, and he intentionally comes back and ends up seducing and marrying the niece. So the character played by Ingrid Bergman, mm-hmm. and has her move back into the aunt's house, and so he can find the jewels that he wasn't able to get during his robbery. And so then, this whole time, well, she started to kind of catch on. Like, oh, this is weird. And of course, they're back in the town this famous murder happened, you know, 20 years ago, and the police chief is kind of suspicious. And so her husband, this robber murderer guy, starts planting these seeds of doubt and trying to drive her crazy, basically trying to discredit her is what he's trying to do. But in keep pushing her to think that she's crazy. So he'd move things around. He would, whenever he was trying to find the jewels, the lights would flicker in the attic because it was gas lighting back then. So that's where the term comes from. And then she would say, "See, the lights are flickering. The lights are flickering." And he would say, "What are you talking about? I don't see the lights flickering. They're not flickering at all." And so she was really feeling like she was losing it. And then, you know, by the end of the film, it's uncovered and kind of life goes back to normal very quickly. It's sort of like the police chief barges in and he's under arrest and she's, "Oh, thank goodness you're here." And there seems to be kind of no emotional consequences to it. So anyways, this is where the term comes from, and they do a great job of kind of showing that intentional level of deceit and the damage it can do to somebody. When you're denying them their reality, and it's just very psychologically harmful. And so the main issue I kind of had with that movie, but again, it's an old movie, and was that there were no emotional consequences shown of that. It was very quickly kind of, oh, you got caught up in this huge deception, but you're fine now, yay.
Right.
Kind of a thing. Yeah. So those of us who have experienced gaslighting know that the effects of it can and often do last years, if not decades. Mm-hmm. It's that constant questioning of your own perception of reality, of your own judgment, of other people, of feelings of like paranoia and distrust and all kinds of things. What do you think, Angie?
Well, first of all, thank you for the movie explanation, because I think that's really helpful for people. So let me say that. you know, and outside of that, I think that a lot of it, it's so subtle, you know, like as you explained about with the movie, It's not like he was in her face screaming at her or acting, you know what I mean, acting crazy. It's sometimes it's that subtle, and you really do think you're going crazy, which I think is one of the signs sometimes. But right, so like
Definitely. Yeah.
right, I know a lot of times, and I think that's one of the biggest things I've heard from, you know, I thought I was going crazy, and I've said the same thing for the same reason, you know, separately from everyone else. So I think, you know, you stop feeling like who you felt like before. You felt like you kind of feel like a different person. And I think that I know I started to feel like I wasn't even, I've talked a lot about being not feeling like a real person, right? But I think I started doubting myself, my own perceptions of things around me. I felt like I was less confident. I mean, not that I was ever super confident back in the day, but I felt like I less confident in my own abilities, maybe. I thought everything was my fault. I thought I was definitely the problem in every situation. I didn't think that I could make a choice on my own or a decision without consulting the toxic person in my life who had convinced me that I was not capable of that in different ways. Which is, it's almost embarrassing to admit, by the way, because I've always, you know, thought of myself as a relatively capable person, but during certain times it got very difficult. I found that I was isolating, and the reason I'm talking about the way I felt instead of the science at the moment is because I think it's important, because that's how you're going to find out, I guess is my point, right? Like you don't really know your own mind anymore, you know what I mean? In a way, so people start to think that we don't trust ourselves, we don't trust our thoughts, because we over the course of years of going through this, you think, okay, well, this is what I see, and then somebody else tells you, for example, you know, for your whole life you thought the sky was blue, let's say. And this is what you saw as blue. This is blue. This is the color blue. And then one day you run into a narcissist, let's say, and they tell you, no, in fact, that color is green. You're mistaken. And let me tell you why you're mistaken, right? And then over, you know, enough, you hear this enough times, and then one day you're like, oh, okay, I guess that's green. I guess I was wrong all this time. You know what I mean? It's kind of like that. I'm kind of going all over the place here, but I think my point is, certainly we can look at the toxic people in our lives, and we can go, okay, that's gaslighting, right? Once we learn what it is. But I think initially, when you are, you know, kind of in the thick of it and you don't really know what's happening and you're just like, I don't understand why my relationship is so weird, you know, that's the time I think that you have to kind of look inward and see how am I being affected by this, or what do I feel like, and do these things match? And then you can start to, that's how I had to go anyway. I had to figure out, I found out about the whole thing because I thought something was wrong with me, and I started, you know, researching. And this is before Google was a serious thing, so there wasn't a lot of thing. I mean, Google was there, but it wasn't nearly as profound as it is today. Anyway,
Yeah, I think a real common situation with gaslighting that probably a lot of people in our community have experienced has to do with cheating. So
oh,
it's very
yes.
common for them. Let's say you find their phone, you know, you come across something where there's a text from somebody else. They've been showing sexy pictures, or they've, you know, talking sexy talk, and you confront them about this, and they flat out deny it. That never happened. I don't even know who that woman is or who that guy is. And you're jealous. You're paranoid. This is the gaslighting part. So they're denying reality, and then they're
Yes.
spinning it. And then that kind of to add insult to injury, then they're spinning it around and making it seem like, no, you're the one with the problem.
Yep.
And, you know, and that can be really crazy making. I dated a guy, I've talked about him a little bit, in high school, who was just, oh God, he scariest person. And it was that kind of thing. And I would ask him about something, and he would say that didn't happen, or that wasn't there, or I was crazy, or, and it was all kinds of things, like stuff that didn't matter. And I think that's what it was. It was because it wasn't significant. Like it wasn't as extreme as cheating. It was moving, like agreeing, oh, I thought you said you'd be over at 8 and you show up at 10:30. No, I said 10:30. Right. And of course, this is before like the paper trail of a text message. So I'm like, oh, okay. Well, totally not a big deal. Like I was going to see you and spend time with you tonight anyhow. So I'm going to assume that I misremembered. And it wasn't that I bought into the gaslighting because I had low self-esteem or whatever. It's just these little things that were somewhat believable. Like, okay, that could happen. Anybody that knows me knows I have a memory of Swiss cheese. So yeah, okay, maybe we did agree on the wrong a different time or maybe a different place, or maybe you did tell me your middle name and I forgot, or you know, and I just don't think it's on the radar of most people to realize, to even understand. Like, there's people out there that just lie. They lie for fun. They lie for their own ego. They lie because they're bored. And sometimes they lie to get out of trouble. And, you know, most people that are, we tell, everybody tells lies. When people lie, it's normally to avoid consequences. But most people, when they're called out on it, they don't continue to push against the truth repeatedly. You know, if you lie to your boss and say, oh, I calling in sick, right? And but really you just needed you just wanted a day off. I don't know. You wanted to leave town early because have a 3-day weekend, and your boss sees you in traffic on the freeway leaving town, right? You just happen to they see you. If they ask you about it, you know, you're not going to stand, most people aren't going to stand there and continue to deny it when they're caught, but a narcissist will. And that's what's so wild and crazy making is it just spins you around all kinds of ways.
And that's one of those things that, you know, you mentioned your high school boyfriend with his little games. I experienced something like that with my ex, where we would be talking and he would start picking, you know, and I would say, let's just say that he said, you know what? You have a big stupid nose and I hate your stupid nose, right? Then I would literally in the moment turn around, and that wasn't what he would really say, but I'm just using that as a silly example. And in the moment, I would literally turn around and go, okay, well, you just told me that I have a big stupid nose and you hate my stupid nose. And then he would say, I didn't say that. Or, well, you misunderstood me. Or, well, it was a joke, you know, whatever, something that either minimized or invalidated what I said. And I think, even though literally it just happened, like I was positive what I heard, you know what I'm saying? And it was that it got that bad with him, that it was that open or whatever. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for, that blatant. And that was after, you know, a couple of other probably a year or two of more subtle things. And then it got to the point that it was like that. So I was always shocked by it. Even though, even when I knew, like I logically understood that it was not, that he was, that it just happened that, you know what I mean? I understood logically that it was crazy, that it was wrong, and he would still somehow manage to make me doubt myself because he would pick, and then talk and talk and talk. And I don't know if I just got exhausted and I just said, fine, whatever, or if I actually started to believe some of the stuff that he was, you know what I mean? And of course, growing up with a parent who pulled similar tricks didn't make it any harder for him, right? But with you were talking about the cheating thing, and I see this comment from Jack Goodings in the chat here. He says, the cheating part, that's the one thing I have difficulty moving on from. The level of deception and mind games, the projection of guilt onto me, that itself should be illegal. And that right there is something that I think is really important to note, is when the cheating thing happens, for example, or anything, it could be anything, not just cheating, but they do have a tendency to turn everything around and somehow make it your fault. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to, clients and other people who have been like, well, you know what, I wasn't doing myself up like I used to, or I had really gained weight, or I had really, you know, gotten busy with the kids or with work or whatever, and so I kind of get it, because and they're saying that because that's what they've been convinced of. You know what I mean? It's not because it's acceptable to cheat when your spouse is busy with work or the kids. You know what I mean? So, anyway, wanted
And
to
I
throw
think
that.
this is significant to realize, because this is how people tend to get pulled off course. When somebody has an explanation for their behavior, it doesn't always mean it's valid.
That's right.
So we could use that same logic and say, oh, yeah, well, yeah, I rear-ended that car because they cut me off in traffic, or they were going too slow. I wouldn't have had to freak out in road rage and rear in their car had they not, been in my way. It's that level of entitlement.
That's right. That's
That's
exactly
the
it.
difference. And so adults, and this is a childlike mentality of I don't get my way, and so I'm going to throw a fit and I'm going to punish what you did. See what you made me do. You did this. All my behavior is in response to you. But really, it's especially with things that they want to do, like cheat, steal. It's what they want, but it's their way of justifying it to themselves.
Yes. That's
'Cause you'll
right.
hear it across the board. Oh, it's everybody else's fault. I cheated because this woman at work was throwing herself at me. Or it was
Oh,
because
yeah.
you weren't around that much, or you dressed too sexy, and or when you were going out with friends, I was concerned you were actually cheating on me.
Right, so I cheated on you.
So I cheated on you, right? And you're just like, I can't even keep up with all the different ways that reality is skewed.
Yeah. 100%. I'm sorry about the noise. My cat's not happy that he's outside the room right now.
No.
Anyway, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think, oh, that's so annoying. Shh. Do you hear him?
Yes.
He's so rude.
I
Anyway.
love you, Mama.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Okay. Anyway. Another thing that I think they do on that same line, I think they trivialize you. Oh, I gotta talk about the people thing. Okay, wait. But first, I want to say this: the trivializing your feelings or minimizing your feelings, or telling you, "Oh, I see." Oh, poor. Like when I said the thing about the big stupid nose example, where I said, I turned around and repeated back to him exactly what he said. Then that might carry on and go, something like, oh, poor you. You have a big stupid nose. Like, poor you for, oh, I'm not allowed to talk about your big stupid nose. But you know what I mean? That kind of, anyway. But the thing I really wanted to bring up was the whole everyone says thing. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where, like, if they're arguing with you, they're complaining about something, and then they go, well, everyone says I'm right about this, or everyone says you're lazy or boring or stupid or whatever thing everyone says. Who's everyone? And if you ask them, they'll say, oh, everyone. People at work or my friends or your family or whatever. And if you actually ask for a name or you go and you actually talk to some of the people they claim are doing that, that's a it doesn't fly. And anyway, the point is, once again, it's another way of them trying to manipulate your perception in the situation.
Well, I think also realize even if you do go talk to other people or run into them, keep in mind that best case scenario, they've told their truth, which is a very pathological and skewed version of reality. Worst
Absolutely.
case scenario, it's intentional deceit and they know, they're consciously aware that they're spreading lies to make you look bad. This, again, this was not. This is not on the radar of most people. I remember when I found out about everything with, well, not everything, but enough about what Jack was up to. I had to go meet him at work to pick up some of my stuff. And I walked in and I couldn't figure out why everybody was giving me the stink eye. And I'm like, I didn't do anything wrong here. And I was so upset about it and I was so hurt. And I just assumed that they were just kind of taking his side, that they were just supporting him. It didn't even cross my mind that he would have maliciously and intentionally made up a whole alternate reality It seriously didn't, that did not occur to me for like years afterwards. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense that it was, you know, so it's just, it's nonsense and craziness. And, you know, that, like I was saying, the guy in high school, one of the big reasons I stayed with them for as long as I did, and I think this is the reason a lot of people stay for as long as they do, is I didn't have that concrete proof.
Oh, I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
Yes.
And well, I don't know, like I think he's lying about where he was, or I think he might be cheating, or I think this, or I think that. And you know, knowing what I know now is the fact when there's so many what ifs and mental anguish and perpetual confusion, that in itself is a deal breaker, because that doesn't exist in a relationship with in a healthy relationship with effective communication and you know, understanding of boundaries and emotional maturity. Like that level of chaos and craziness is dysfunctional, and it only exists when there's at a minimum of like one person communicating deeply dysfunctional, you
Yes,
know, like,
100%.
and then when you realize, I don't, you know, I don't have this dynamic with other people in my life. Like that's a big
Oh,
sign,
yes,
you know?
it is. It really is. And I remember saying to my ex, I used to say it all the time, how come I can communicate with everyone else but you? Like, I communicate for a living. You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? Like, how come you can't understand me? Like, other people understand me. You know, and I would do that all the time. I literally said it out loud because I got to that point where I was, I would, oh
Yeah, and then here's another sign too, is then you sit down and you're trying to remember like the events, right?
yes.
And it's almost like a hidden camera type thing. That's kind of the benefit nowadays with people that have cameras inside.
Yes.
My cousin always jokes about this, because her and her husband, whenever they fight, because they have cameras, because they have the kids and stuff, and she'll be like, okay, roll the clip.
That's awesome.
Replay.
I used to threaten to record conversations for the same reason. That's so smart.
Yeah, it's so funny.
I
And
love it.
but you know, when you're sitting there and you're trying to figure out and piece together like a Law and Order episode of what happened and who, what, when, where, why, and how, and what exactly was said, and like one word is taken out of context, but it changes the whole thing, and you're like, I can't for the life of me seem to communicate effectively with this person, and I just don't have these issues with other people. And again, this is where a lot of, I think, therapists and relations, like life coaches and people that focus on relationships, they have this idea of, well, communication fixes everything. You know, all relationship issues are a breakdown of communication, or you need to learn their love language. Like that tends to be like one of those two things. And no, like if you're in a relationship with a pathological person, whether it's your boss, a coworker, your neighbor, your child, your significant other, if more communication only seems to muddle the conversation more, then something's profoundly wrong. And if you don't have these issues with other people, then odds are there's manipulation afoot. So
It's really true. And I totally, I think that's why, you know, I had someone come into one of my videos the other day and they were commenting about, you know, oh, you know, this is family. You can't do this with family. You know, what are you supposed to do? Live without a family? You know, because people, it was about something about, you know, going no contact. And this person was, you know, basically saying I was wrong for saying, you know, this is what I think about that. And not just what I think about it, but what we know is proven. You know, we know that if we go no contact, we get healthier. We know that if we go no contact, we can heal. And sometimes, unfortunately, that involves your family. I'm not saying it's the best idea, you know, it's the best thing, but it's the only thing if you want to heal and grow forward when it comes to old. I mean, I ideally, you know, I know that sometimes we can't go no contact for different reasons, and then we have to manage these people, and certainly we do that when we have to. But Obviously, I think the ideal solution, as far as it can go, ideally they would stop being like that. But unfortunately, we don't see that happen very often. But people don't understand unless they've been there, and that's how I can tell. In fact, I probably know who that person was who commented that, if I really think about it. But I think there's a big disconnect, and I think we are kind of taught, look. You never, you stick by family no matter what. Families are crazy. They're full of nuts. All the funny things people say, and some of that stuff is true. But there's different types of dysfunction, I guess. But when it's dysfunction that is involves no empathy whatsoever, and no willingness to change or evolve together or as an individual or whatever to make the relationships better, then I mean, you have a choice. You can continue to be in the toxic puddle, or you can climb out and evolve. You know what I mean? I had this,
Yeah.
yeah, anyway.
I don't like that whole saying, this family is forever. It tends to be the dysfunctional members of a family that cling to that. So I'm always very leery of same thing with places of employment that'll say, "Oh, but you know what? We treat everybody like family around here." And it's kind of code for we're going to re not respect your boundaries, and we're going to ask you to work late, and we're not going to pay you more,
That's
and
interesting.
we're going to ask you to give your all. And it's kind of a one way, thing. So it's, for my standards or people in my life, it's not a necess it's definitely not about whether or not they're related to me. It's how they treat me. Because I mean, sociopaths have families too. Narcissists have families too. And the amount of destruction they cause, and it can be tremendous. And people, when they say, "Oh, well, family's forever," we've got to somehow tolerate this awful behavior. That's enabling,
Yeah, for sure.
and it's deeply dysfunctional. I mean, if I had a relative who had committed a crime, a horrific crime, or was damaging or whatever, I wouldn't be having them over for the holidays. I wouldn't be spending time with them. I wouldn't be giving them money while they're in jail. You have consequences for your actions, and that's on you. So, but they can be so manipulative and spin that around. How can you abandon me like this? And it's like, dude, these things didn't happen to you. You made them happen. Like, there's a difference.
Yeah, they don't see that. Another thing I used to see a lot of the time was, and this would happen with my parental narcissist as well as the one I was married to, and that was like events that didn't really happen, or that did, and I was told otherwise, or the story, where you go out somewhere with a family member, friend, spouse, whatever, and they start telling a story that involves you that you don't recall, and that never happened, as far as you're aware. And this growing up, this happened to me all the time. My mother would tell all these stories about what an amazing mother she was, and what a whatever, how perfect everything was. And for years, I just knew that I should shut up and agree with whatever was being said, even though I knew it wasn't true on some level. I mean, I always knew, but then I, of course, thought, did I just forget? After a while, But I remember when I started to really realize what was going on. At one point, I was in my, early 30s, I guess, and another story came out about what an amazing mother she was when I was a kid, and it was somehow insulting me at the same time about the kind of mother I was, which of course made it a double awesome story. And I literally, and she, you remember that? I was said that she said, and I said, actually, I don't. Oh my goodness. Talk about narcissistic injury. It turned ugly really quickly. But that was it. That was it. So I think that's another sign, though, when they tell those stories and they expect you to go along with them, and if you don't, and I know that's, I think the gaslighting, and it's not just the telling of other stories. It could also be a story that, or you say, well, remember when we did this, or remember when we talked about that, and even with text evidence today, people will lie and say, well, that's not what I meant, or that's not how it went, or that's not what I said, or we never went there, we never did that, and again, it's all about confusing you, I think. throwing you off and controlling you. Because the fact is, I think they use triggering as another way to kind of, so they'll trigger something in you. Like they know, like it bothers you if they do, if they, I don't know, hug another person of, that they might be interested in. Or let's say if you're at a party and you see them across the room and they have a certain look on their face and they're staring at you. Nobody sees this but you. Or they use a certain phrase and they might say it with a big smile. But then when you know that phrase and you know it's a dog whistle, right? And you know when you get home, it's over, you're in trouble. Or, you know what I mean? Little, they do little things to, in public to throw you off, to the things they know that you know will be a problem later or are a problem. And then you spend the rest of the time you're doing like at a party or at a family gathering or whatever, you're sick to your stomach, you're stressing out, you're trying to figure out what you're, how you're going to fix whatever it is. You know what I mean? I think all of these things are, my point is they trigger you like that. And now you're so focused on how to resolve it for them and you and your relationship and whatever, that you're almost weakened and easier to control, easier to manipulate. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the more you begin to doubt yourself, the more you begin to look for them to them for clarity.
No doubt.
Right? So it's like if it's only the two of us that are in this situation and they keep telling you that you misremember things, you're bipolar, you're crazy, you must be tired, do you have
You
early onset
bet.
Alzheimer's?
Yeah.
You must whatever it might be, and you're like, "Well, God, I don't know. I don't know." And it's you're not anticipating this person lying about certain things. It really shakes you to the core, and that lasts long after that relationship ends. I think that's one of the biggest challenges people have with
Right.
healing and moving forward is learning to trust their perception of reality and their judgment again. Because especially with the narcissist, you learn kind of the unintended consequence of gaslighting. Like, I don't think that most of them are that. I mean, these aren't intelligent ways to go through life. Like, this is a very difficult way to go through life, is to just manipulate and, just all these games. It's a kind of a low emotional IQ way to get through. And
Truly.
so I don't think it's necessarily intentional that they're trying to erode somebody's sanity or,
Right, I agree with that.
but for some of them it is, but
Depending.
yeah, but for, I think for the vast majority, it's not. And, but the challenge is afterwards, people really struggle with, I don't know, I have an issue. Because when you're in a relationship, this is what I was gonna say, when you're in a relationship with a narcissistic person and they keep eroding your reality, you start. Anytime you have the signals of potential danger or hey, this isn't right, and it kind of starts with confusion, and it ends with like potential, my life is in danger, right? Like I'm afraid, fear, anxiety, confusion, all of these warning signals that we need, that these are part of our instincts. We need these to keep ourselves safe. We lose faith. That's like we turn down the volume on them. And this is one of the reasons why abusive relationships can get so dangerous. And this is also one of the reasons if people survive these relationships, why there can be so much shame. Because then they're telling other people, oh yeah, okay, my ex was completely psycho, and he or she wanted to meet in the park to give me back my stuff, or they wanted to come over and talk, and then they did, and then they stabbed me. Right. And people are like, well, why would you let somebody like that in? Or why would you go in a dark place and, a vacant place and meet them? And, didn't you know? Like, didn't you know better? But it's like, yeah, you had the funny feeling that something was off about that, but you turned down the volume because you're so used to turning down the volume. And this is the part that lasts for, can last for decades after abuse. And this is also the challenge with other people that are trying to potentially help, because if they haven't experienced this, then they're going to fall into their own biases, which tends to be, let's kind of this level of unearned optimism. Oh, you know what? Yeah, this new guy or new person you met on online dating. Well, they seem so nice. They're a minister. They're nothing like your ex, right? They're a leader of a youth group. Or he's got two kids, or she's got, you know what I mean? They're safe. So all those funny feelings you feel, just turn down the volume on them and go out and have fun. Love like you've never been hurt before. And then if something bad happens,
It's so difficult because you want to love like you've never been hurt before. That would be great, wouldn't it? But the fact is that it's just, I think there are more and more, as our society progresses in the way that it is progressing. Can you still hear me? Wait, I think I just broke my. Okay. I think there are more and more toxic people out there or something. Either that or we're just realizing the magnitude because of the internet, or the internet is increasing it. I don't know. But it does seem to be going on. And I mean, there are people out there. Okay, here's an example there are people out there who are teaching the no contact method as a way to get your person back. And I really feel bothered by that. because it's obviously a game. They're teaching a game is what they're doing. They're teaching someone to manipulate someone else. And that's not why we teach no contact. We mean it. it's not about, oh, just go away from them for 30 days so that they'll come back. That's toxic. And if somebody comes back because you go away for 30 days, I mean, it's a, you know what I'm saying?
This isn't a relationship to be in
No.
anyhow.
It's obviously full of games. And so there are literally people making millions of dollars teaching this to.
I know. It's disgusting.
Yes.
It's disgusting and it's damaging and
Yeah.
it's it keeps
Infuriating.
people living with the lights off, like in a dysfunction,
Absolutely. Yeah.
Here's a comment in the chat from Lovey who says, yeah, I was with a guy that mainly did the gaslighting thing when he'd ghost. He'd disappear a few weeks to months and say we had an argument and that I told him and told and I told him to not come back. Then okay, then why are you back?
Right.
I just wanted to add to the this is a very I've heard this multiple times from multiple people. Women especially, where guys will do this when really they want to go cheat.
Yeah.
And then they'll either start a fight out of the blue, or they'll turn something into a fight, or they'll say, I need to just go find myself. I'm not ready for a relationship right now, or I just need some time. And then they disappear for a couple weeks or a month or whatever, and they've been cheating. And it's a way for them to justify, oh, well, I wasn't in a re we weren't in a relationship.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right.
I've
And
seen
so,
that.
yeah. And most people don't even think to ask their partner. Not that these kind of people would ever tell the truth, but most people don't even think to ask, like, oh, were you sleeping with somebody else during this time? They just assume, oh, we had this fight and they're trying to cool down. No, there was nothing there. They were on their phone 5 minutes after you
No
left or
doubt.
you hung up.
Yep. No doubt. And here's something from Caramel from Kansas, who says, that's a cute name, who says, I used to try to communicate, and my friends would say, well, why can't you talk about it? It drove me crazy trying to explain that I couldn't talk to him about it. You can't. And that's incredibly valid. Because here's the thing, the point is, what even when you're trying, I guess my point in that is obviously you can't talk to the narcissist about it, not effectively, but you can talk to your friends. But if your friends haven't experienced what you're experiencing, one of two things: either they're just not going to get it, or they're going to kind of, oh, okay, that sounds really terrible, and then they're going to secretly think to themselves, that girl's crazy. What is wrong with her? Or that guy's crazy. Because it sounds, when you say it out loud, when you explain some of the things, some of them are easy to explain, but stuff like gaslighting is really difficult to articulate when you are not somebody who studies and researches this topic all the time. Do you know what I mean? Even for
Oh,
us, it's not that easy
absolutely.
to explain. But yeah, what were we going to say?
Or even the issues within a relationship, even if gaslighting really isn't included, like if there's manipulation at all in there, again, normal, decent people tend to think that everybody's like them and that communication solves all issues because everybody's well-intended and wants to actually resolve things. And that's not correct. So when you have somebody that's looking to create confusion or to create blame or to not be accountable for their behavior, you're going to get a bunch of nonsense. And Then the added challenge to that is when you're trying to explain to other people, it can seem so freaking trivial. Like the things that you're pointing out that you're like, I know how this sounds. Like this
Yeah.
sounds nuts, or this sounds really insignificant, but it's not.
Right.
You know,
Exactly.
like they said this was green, but it's really orange. And people are like,
Right.
oh, well, so what? No big deal. Like it's green, it's orange. What does it matter? And you're
Right,
like,
exactly.
no.
Yeah. Here's an example from my life. When I
Okay.
was a kid, I was 13. I had a birthday party, and my mother took us to her favorite pizza place, of course. And that was the party. And she ordered pizza ahead of time for us. And she ordered a pizza with everything for my friends and I. And I do not like pizza with everything. I have never liked pizza with it. I hate mushrooms. I hate olives. I'm super picky. I would rather have cheese pizza or pepperoni or one topping, you know, not anything fancy. And so two things. Number one, that pizza was way more expensive than the one that I would have preferred. And number two, I said to her after the party, "Why did you order pizza that had everything on it when you know I don't like everything?" She goes, "Well, I didn't know what everyone else liked." And I said, "But it was my birthday." And she said, "So?" I said, "You know what I liked." And she said, "And?" And that was it. So, and I guess that's a lack of empathy, but it's also a little bit of gaslighting because if your own mother by your 13th birthday doesn't really know what you want on your pizza, and she for sure knew I didn't like all that stuff, you know, but that's what she liked. And that's why she ordered that because,
Right.
you know, that's what she wanted. And so it sounds like a dumb thing to be upset about, right? But it really affected me because it was probably one of the first times that I recognized how deliberately she didn't care about me or my feelings, you know, the deliberate
Yes.
lack of empathy. And
Well, and
then,
there's,
yeah, tell
sorry,
me.
go ahead.
I was just going to say with the response that I got felt, in hindsight, I think was a little gaslighty. Anyway, you were saying.
Yeah, so that response right there is so spot on because it's what she wanted to order, but she didn't, because kids normally don't like an everything pizza.
I mean,
Kind of
seriously.
everybody, nobody orders an everything pizza when there's a party
Right.
for kids. It tends to be either pepperoni or cheese, right?
Exactly, and that's pretty much what you have to go with
Yeah. So,
as with everything. Right.
you know, so it was really for her, but then she spun it in a way of, well, I didn't know here I'm being so considerate, right?
Exactly.
I didn't know what everybody else wanted. I wanted to be a good hostess. So I thought I'd get a pizza with everything, and then, you know, the kids could just kind of pick off whatever.
Right.
But you know, again, it was really for her
Clearly. I mean,
and
yeah.
not thinking about anybody, you or
Right.
anybody else. And then the result of for that for you, it's sort of like, wow, I feel really invalidated. It's my own birthday and my preference doesn't matter.
Right. And I was
You
being
know?
selfish by bringing it up at all, you know, and
Yeah.
ungrateful and, you know, yeah, totally.
Yep.
Yep. All right, let's see here.
Here's a comment from Punished No More. It says, what are your thoughts on these manifestation courses whereby we can manifest an apology, but the person is a full-blown narcissist? How do you think about that when you don't want the person back?
Okay, first of all, can I say something?
Go for it.
In any type of law of attraction type practice or manifestation practice, you can never ever truly affect another person directly, in my opinion. You can only affect yourself and your own perception and your own life directly. And I understand that maybe you want an apology, but I think that's a very strange. If I think if somebody's offering that as a course, I would never ever recommend buying that course, and I would probably recommend against it because that's some BS. You can't, even if the narcissist apologizes to you, they only do so because they want something from you. Certainly not because they mean that they're sorry, ever. In my experience, Dana, yours?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's incredibly, well, it's magical thinking for
Yeah.
starters.
Yeah.
And then second, it's dangerous thinking because
Right.
when you're, especially when you're trying to,
There are courses like this?
I guess it doesn't surprise me. I have heard all kinds of stuff online, especially with law of attraction kind of, but again, it goes back to people not realizing how path, I need to do a video about it. A whole thing about that. It just makes me want to spit nails. I just get so angry where it's this concept of and this tends to go along with magical thinking, is the result is then you have this level of hyper accountability, and it's inappropriate accountability, right? So if I have this idea of, okay, I am going to manifest this in my life, and my thoughts become things, right? That's kind of the core of law of attraction stuff. My thoughts become things. Well, then what does that say if I develop cancer? Mm. Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, then some, yeah.
So, and then it's sort of like this inappropriate level of blame. Well, it's because of the thoughts that you were thinking, or it's because of the environment you were in. And sometimes it can be a correlation, right? If you have a job or a relationship that you hate, absolutely, it can make you sick and it can contribute to all these things. But sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
So it's very easy to link up incorrect cause and effect. And that's what makes magical thinking so dangerous. It's like if I were to say, okay, this sweater that I'm wearing, this purple sweater, this is my lucky sweater. Mm-hmm. And I wear it to a baseball game and my team wins.
Right.
If I'm engaging in magical thinking, I'm like, it's my lucky sweater.
Yeah.
Okay. I manifested them winning because I focused on them winning. I listened to this, you know, their theme song all the way there in the car and, you know, rah, 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 go team, go. And yeah. I caused this to happen. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes, and then the worst case scenario, frankly, is then, so the next time I wear the same sweater and they win. Yeah. So now I've, my inaccurate belief has been reinforced.
Right.
Oh, my sweater really is lucky. And then the third time they win. Right. And I'm like, man, I am freaking powerful. I am a powerful being, you know, like what up, you know, it creates this sense of arrogance and narcissism and inappropriate mm-hmm. accountability. Yeah. And because it totally discounts all of their training and that's everything true. Else that goes into that, them actually winning.
Right.
And then what happens is law of attraction also states, well, kind of look for evidence that you're manifesting something. So you see this with money. So you set the intention that you want $1 million, right? And this, serenity now. So then people think, okay, well, any evidence of money that's coming my way is proof that my manifestation, that I'm on the path, and I am actually manifesting this money. Mm-hmm. And that's not true. Like, and this can be proven that it's not true because we can run experiments on it. But this is where it gets dangerous. So then when people think that they have this ability of control, like here's an example of how this can go wrong. Then they say, I want to manifest my ultimate partner. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what they look like.
Yeah. Right? It doesn't
tall,
really work that
dark,
way.
Handsome, yeah. Whatever the partner might be. And then you meet this person and they're very charming, and odds are, because you think that you manifested this, you're mm-hmm. going to drop all healthy boundaries.
Yep.
And you're going to move full speed ahead because you think, well, this is a gift from the universe. And who am I to question the universe?
Right.
And this is how people get into some serious, serious, serious problems. They buy houses they can't afford. They quit their job. They start different jobs. They start spending time with a lot of the wrong people because they're taking certain things as signs and they're not.
Right.
It's confusing causation with correlation.
Yes.
So it's a problem when you're trying to manifest an apology anyhow, but from a manipulative person, if we don't realize like there is no added value of an apology from a manipulative person, because they're probably still manipulating.
And they don't mean it.
They don't mean it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I want to say I do believe up to a point in the law of attraction, but not the magical thinking part of it, the staying positive, the attracting what you want within reason, you know, certainly has changed my mm-hmm. life in some really good ways, but I don't believe in, yeah, I think that is a ridiculous thing to even, I'm angry that people are selling that, a course to manifest an apology. Why?
Well,
Sorry.
frankly, to manifest anything. I mean,
It's for that
it's
person to manifest
really
money, whoever's
dangerous.
selling the course, is what it
Yeah.
is. It's not
Well,
about anything else. I mean, that's just what they're doing is, I think they're doing their marketing research, and they're like, well, what do people want? Well, people want an apology. So, people want closure. You don't get closure from a narcissist, not really. You have to create your own closure, right? But in that case, I'm kind of infuriated. Sorry. I feel like that's, you know how I feel, and I know Dana, you feel the same way. When people scam survivors of abuse, it infuriates me beyond. I can't. Anyway, okay.
well, I think a lot of people, especially in the law of attraction community, they do think it works because they have faulty evidence of it. It
I
would be
mean,
like, see, my sweater caused
right.
my team to win 3 times. I set the intention of getting $1 million, but I found 20 bucks in my pocket the other day, or I won a lottery ticket for 50.
I mean, I think there can be pot. Look, I'm pro thinking positive. I'm pro focusing on what you want. I believe in that, but I don't believe that your sweater can fix the game, or that, like, I think you have to be practical and reasonable. Just because you want $1 million doesn't mean you can sit on your butt and get $1 million. You have to like do something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have to take inspired action or whatever you want to call it, but you can't. Anyway, we're not here
But
to talk
but
about the law of
then
attraction,
I
but
know, but then that can be dangerous too, because people do take inspired action, and their inspired action might be to cash in their retirement account to start a business that's this half-cocked idea
I mean, you have to be
because
practical still. You can't, and so that's
exactly.
why, yeah, you're right. You're right.
But and I do want to just add real quick, the whole like setting your intention and visualizing what you want, absolutely. Like
That's what I'm talking about.
that's yes, I
Yes.
know. I just wanted to clarify, like
Yes.
that's very, very, very important when it comes to, I mean, that's setting a direction for your life, and it's activating that part of our brain called the reticular activating system, where it picks up things that are important to us. So it starts turning up the volume on things that are important. So we start seeing these things, and it can feel really mystical because our
Yeah.
brain is working differently, but that's what it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a question here from MBT that says, my big brother does the gaslighting and he does that. And then really quick after that, I'd like us to touch on, I want to answer this question, but then I want us to touch on friends and gaslighting so that you can start thinking about it because okay, I saw a couple people, Maura and someone else were asking about that. So, okay. MBT says, my big brother does the gaslighting and he does that to people where he winks his eye at me, the storytelling thing that I talked about. Winks his eye at me so I can follow along to play with the person's mind. Is that gaslighting or playing? And I think in that it just depends on the intention, right? So if you're, playing a joke on someone and you're playing along with the joke, like sometimes my son will be, tell my daughter, oh, this is, I don't know, some silly thing, well, I heard that, you're going to have to go to some weird camp for a week or some, I don't know. I'm just making that up. I don't know. Some joke they're playing and winking at me to play along. That's different because that's coming out momentarily. The truth is coming out, I usually mess it up though. Because I usually don't know what they're doing. But I think, so in that case, maybe if it's just a joke or it's something silly and it's not intended to be hurtful or to manipulate someone, then that is probably not gaslighting, but I think in some cases, like it's just about getting attention and whatever. But maybe I guess my point is, are you playing along in order to help them or not, or make, make a funny, not hurtful joke, or is it something more sinister? And so I think of it, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. Is the intent to make this person feel stupid?
Right.
To get them to see like what can they believe, and then be like, ha,
Right.
that didn't really happen. That kind of stuff, it's not cool. Like there's
No.
no benefit to that. And that's
Right.
coming from a place of a really insecure ego
Yes.
to build other, to lead people down a path and then kind of, knock the chair out from underneath them kind of a thing. And that's just not, yeah, it's not cool.
Totally.
So
Totally agree.
here's a comment from Little Monster Pants. That's a cute name.
Little monster.
Little Monster Pants.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, go on.
This is, mine told me he forgave me. I still have no idea for what. I was so shocked when he said it, I didn't even ask. Mind blown.
I mean, Yeah. I've seen that too. I've seen them telling you, or telling me, or and other people things like that, or that somehow they owe, you owe them an apology, or well, I think you should apologize too when you do when they apologize. I mean, yeah, I think that's just a matter of narcissistic injury and or them thinking that, well, I can't take all the blame for everything, even though there's. They don't take the blame for anything. I think it's another way to gaslight you, make you doubt yourself. Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Oh, I think, keep in mind at the core, when there's this level of narcissism, kind of by definition, it's all about them and it's never, ever, ever their fault.
Right.
So you're talking about really immature behavior. So Angie and I both have seen this time and time again where they will say things like that. Oh, I forgive you. And you're like, wait a minute, you were the one that was cheating or you stole $10,000 from me. Like, what do you mean you forgive me? And, but what they're really saying is, I forgive you for
For being mad at
confronting me
me.
with my bad
Yeah.
behavior, and I'm willing to take you back.
On that same note, I've seen that. Oh my goodness. How often have you experienced this? If you guys are hearing right now in the chat, tell me. I
Oh.
can't tell you how many times I got angry or I got upset because they did something wrong or mean or disrespectful or whatever, and then instantly they flipped it around and they were upset with me, and I was somehow before the end of that conversation apologizing to them. Like for example, with my ex, if he wanted to like go out to a bar with his friends, and A, we were broke, and B, I didn't really see the point of him going to a bar with his friends when I was sitting at home with the baby, whatever, then there would be this whole, and it wasn't really his friends because he didn't really have any friends. And there would be this whole thing, and I would be like, well, we can't really afford for you to do that. And then he would push, and I would get upset. And then he would, anyway, long story short, then by the end of the conversation, I was begging him to please go to the bar. Please go to the, you're right, I'm wrong. Please go to the bar because I was so. Emotionally exhausted, and
Yeah.
somehow they made me feel like I had done something wrong by saying, no, well, I'm not allowed to go out with my friends. You're so controlling, doll. Anybody? Do you, Dana?
Yep. Yep. And another take on that too is when after you've broken up or the relationship ends or whatever, and that you've confronted them and then they email you or text you like nothing's wrong. Like, hey, how's it going? Or they'll say something like, my mom said you were messaging her, like you need to leave her alone. They'll kind of do something to kind of bait you in to where you're like, wait, what? No, I didn't message her. They're just trying to get a response to open the door to communication.
No doubt.
And the best response is no response, because this kind of behavior, it's just a waste of time and it's a waste of energy. We all got things to do in our life.
Right.
And deal with that kind of nonsense ain't one of them. So, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. I have a couple of pieces of really great advice I'd like to share out of the chat here. Let's uplift each other says choice equals power, which means taking our power back. The choice to stay away. The choice to be no contact. The choice to heal. Yes, love that. Love that. One more thing. Peggy says, I'm now very firm on not accepting you stick by X no matter what. Nope, I'm no one's puppet, no one's ride or die. Firm boundary now. That's right. Love that. Yeah. Sorry, just heard weird noises from the next room. Okay, so Dana, let's really quickly touch on the kids. Not kids. I'm just thinking kids because I was a kid. Let's touch on the friendship thing. Toxic friends, gaslighting friends. Can you think of an example of a friend gaslighting you? I think that. Some people or a couple people asked about that in the chat. I wanted to touch on that.
Not so much with, well, I had a friend who was also a coworker, who was, and this was, I don't know if I think I've probably told you this, but it was so weird. It was when I was almost done writing my very first book.
Okay.
Okay. And I was still working as a nurse, and she was a coworker, like I said, friend of mine. And we'd gone out for brunch. It was like on a Sunday.
Okay.
And I was saying, oh, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Like, I'm gonna put my book out and I'm thinking about quitting my job. Look, this is really what I want to do full time, blah, blah, blah. And the look on her face changed to just complete like disgust and contempt. And I've never seen that look from anybody before. And it was so out of the blue. It left me so unnerved. When I got back to my car, I called another friend of mine and was like, the weirdest thing just happened. Okay, told her about the situation. She didn't know the other gal.
Right.
Anyways, that Monday, that coworker began making my life a living hell at work. And it was a lot of gaslighting, saying, at one point she said, I went to the pharmacy and they said that you had signed off, that they had delivered all of these meds to you and that you'd signed off on them. Where are they?
Oh my
And I was like,
God.
oh my, because I can be forgetful. So
Right.
again, this is not outside the realm of like
Right.
possibility. So I was like, oh no, did I just set down like a whole order, like $10,000 worth of meds somewhere
Oh my
and
gosh.
forget? And then of course my heart just drops and I'm running around my office trying to figure it out. And it was a bunch of things like that. And then this person said that they had an appointment and that you never called them back. And things, and this was going on every day for weeks. And after when I began realizing, oh no, like she has it out for me. Like this started Sunday. It was that look she gave me. And it was so bad. I ended up it in that ended up being a major reason as to why I quit my job
Wow.
and was like, okay, I am going to do this full time. I cannot do this again with people. So anyways, I ended up going to the pharmacy and saying, did you tell Voldemort that I signed off on all of these meds for you? I just call her Voldemort. And they were like, no, they haven't been picked up yet. And she had even said, made a comment like, Dana, I'm just so concerned about you. She came into my office, closed the door behind her. Dana, I'm so concerned about you. Like, you just seem really rattled and like really forgetful. And I mean, as your friend, like, I just don't know if it's like early onset Alzheimer's or we're kind of what's going on? I'm just so worried. And that's when I realized you are a malicious, evil, hateful woman, and you need to be far away from me. And I got to get out of here because you're dangerous.
Honestly, yeah, I can't even. As Riri says in the chat here, always justifying their bad behavior. Normal people don't act that way. I can't tell you how many times I've said that. Normal people don't act like that. Anyway, yeah, I had a friend in when I was first divorced. I met her. She was a fellow single mom, and she was going through some bad stuff in her life, where her baby daddy was in prison. And so she had this little girl. So we were both single moms. I mean, she was still with him though, so she couldn't date or anything. And I wasn't dating because I was brand new to being single. And so I thought, okay, I met her at work, of course, and I think I've talked about this before, but basically she was very like, only us. There could be nobody else in our little friend group. It had to just be the two of us. And when I wanted other people, she was so negative and stressed, she was exhausting, draining. And I remember trying to bring other friends to the table, and she wouldn't have it. So one day I was like, well, I'm going to go out. I was switched departments or whatever, and I was going out with the people on my new team or whatever. And I invited her. I'm like, come on, let's go out to lunch together, and she's like, oh no, you go ahead, you go ahead. And so then I enjoyed the lunch. It wasn't all negative and stressful like it had been with her. And so I continued to want to sit with these people. And anyway, she ended up dumping me over it. But she would play little mind games with me as well, like controlling and gaslighting things, especially controlling, but also just little guilt trips a lot. Anyway, I guess I'm trying to think of an example where I would really call it gaslighting, because mostly it was, with her, it was just like guilt tripping, but guilt tripping and evil stares and, I don't know, very strange. But anyway, I guess okay, I had one friend who got really toxic, and when I had my second well, my third child, technically. My first son was from my, I met my second with my second husband, but I have three total. But my oldest was, anyway, when I had my third child, I had, at the time, I had like a 10-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a new baby. And I was just sitting down to dinner with my family one time. Well, before I had gotten remarried, my friend and I, and even before I was married the first time, first of all, there was no internet or texting back then. And secondly, we would talk on the phone for hours, you know, because I didn't have anything else to do. And then all of a sudden, here I am, and I've got three kids and a husband, and trying to sit down to dinner. And she called me, and she was so angry that I wouldn't drop everything and talk to her for 3 hours. And she and I said, "I'm so sorry. I'm about to sit down to dinner with the family. You know, can I? Can we talk a different time?" And she just got so angry, and she like it was very upsetting, because I felt so already overly busy, and I was still dealing with my mother at that time, like not in my house, but in my life. And it was just, and all these kids, and it was just, I felt really overwhelmed, and she could not comprehend or understand. And later she had her own family and apologized, thank goodness. So she's not a narcissist, but that was really upsetting. Anyway, I got nothing. Any thoughts, any other thoughts on that, or anything else you want to pull out of the chat before we get ready to wrap up? I
Oh
know we're getting.
boy, there's so many good things in here. I guess maybe
I
there's a
know.
couple of themes here that I wanted to
Okay.
address. Tim mentioned this. Ava mentioned this. Tim says, I have no contact with her in real life. How do I go no contact in my brain? I want to
Oh.
stop thinking about her, but the thoughts won't stop. And then Ava mentions, how do we navigate the urge to not sleep with our ex, knowing how toxic everything was? I get urges to just say F it and go over to her house. And my two cents on this is it really helps to write all of the reasons as to why you cut contact with this person, and realize, you know, we have healthy relationships are formed not solely based on how we feel about somebody, but more so how they treat us. So if they're really disrespectful and hurtful, that's the limit of the relationship. And so seeing that for what it is, and then realizing, you know, it's disrespecting ourselves to continue
Yes.
going back to have sex with this person, or to keep contact, to continue to be used, or what have you. And then that's kind of a different thread to explore of why am I willing to sacrifice my dignity for this,
Yes.
you know, and that'll kind of open up some other doors about self-worth and, you know, kind of who taught us that that was okay, or that we needed to sacrifice our dignity and self-respect for love or attention or whatnot. And I think when you get really crystal clear about the damage, these kinds of people can do in our life, and that the damage dysfunctional actions on our end can do in our life, it becomes a lot easier to start distancing ourselves. So,
Yes.
and it also helps to create kind of what we were talking about before, setting this empowering vision for your future
Yes.
and realizing this doesn't happen by accident. You know, really having that intention of, okay, what do you want your life to be? Because if you keep going back or you keep entertaining this toxicity, you're just going to get more of the same.
Yes.
So when is it going to be enough? When you're 30, when you're 40, when you're 50, when you're 70, when? And getting tough with yourself, it helps.
Yeah. And then I don't know. I think I agree with that up to a point, but I also think it's really important, and this is going to sound contradictory, but I also think it's really important to be compassionate with yourself,
I was
because,
just gonna, yes,
right?
I was thinking that when I said that.
Yeah.
Yes, let me rephrase, okay?
Yes.
I'm glad that you said that. Yes, when I say
I know
tough
what
with
you mean,
yourself,
but
replace the word tough with clear.
yes.
Getting clear with
Yes.
yourself, because
Yes.
yeah, you know, we've been
We've had
through the
enough time.
wringer already.
Yeah.
And Angie, you're totally right. It's we need to be compassionate with ourselves, but get crystal clear
Yes.
about this is poison, and we need to stay away.
Yeah. And if it helps you, really, I just want to throw this on top of what you said, Dana, if it helps anyone in the chat here or anyone watching later. Here's the thing that turned everything around for me when it comes to things like that. It was, you know, what would my child or anyone else that you love unconditionally? But for me, it was my children, because that's what I got going on over here. And I would ask myself, what if my daughter came to me and said, "Mom, this is what I'm dealing with." Would I respond to her in the same way that I would think to myself about myself? Heck no. I would give her much more concern, compassion, love, all of that, which we should be doing for ourselves, but we don't. And so when I started to see things from that perception, so for example, if I'm in a bad relationship, I look at this person and I think, you know, if my daughter, you know, or son or whoever was in a relationship with someone like this, and they came to me and I will literally write down, okay, here are the things that are bothering me or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, what would I say? So I try to perceive it from a different, you know, from that perspective, me as mother instead of me as me. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because it's a lot easier to see the right thing when it's not you clouding your own vision, if that makes any sense. Like to see it for someone else, especially someone you love unconditionally. Like, what do you really want for that person who you love unconditionally? And if you can see that, and then you can turn around and look back at yourself and go, you deserve that too, mm-hmm. you know, and treat yourself with that same level of compassion and love and concern and crystal clarity that you would have for someone else that you love unconditionally, because you should love yourself unconditionally. And many of us, we didn't have a mother or a father who was able to give us that place, that soft place to land, to give us that, I think you are perfect all the time, or not perfect, but I love you the way you are. No one else in the mm-hmm. world, you know, tells us that and means it except our parents, unless we have toxic parents. And then we don't get that. We never feel that unconditional love. And so I've learned the hard way to give it to myself. But this part made it easier for me. It was being able to change my perspective by thinking of it in that way. I know I talk about that a lot, but for those of you who haven't been here before, know that it's important and it helps. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And that can also open up a whole other door of, well, yeah, why am I treating other people that I care about so well mm-hmm. and not myself?
Exactly.
You know, and then yeah, there's so many different doors that start opening through this healing process. And yes. that's kind of the gift in yes. healing, and the beauty of it is,
I call it the silver lining. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, wow. I thought I was just trying to heal from, you know, this horrific relationship, but I ended up like rediscovering myself, learning how to love myself, learning how boundaries and standards and deal breakers and communication and all kinds of stuff. And it's just, you know, you have to kind of go through hell to get yeah. there, but man, it's really awesome on the other side.
It really is. So, it yeah. is. I like this thing that Timothy said every time. And this is something that might help when we were talking earlier about the person we're still in contact in our heads because we can't stop thinking about them. Mm-hmm. He said, every time my ex-wife comes to mind, I simply say, you're not welcome here anymore. And I think that's a really great, you know, come up with an affirmation. I just like that tip. And I think even if it's not that particular one, and maybe you think of, like, my go-to affirmation for everything that stresses me out is, nope, I now cancel that thought and I replace it with this affirmation of my true divine desire. And then I focus on literally anything else, hopefully mm-hmm. something positive that I do want to think about, whether it's connected to that negative thing or not. I think that's really, really helpful for me. And the reason that I say that whole weird sentence is because it's a weird sentence that I would not normally say. And I have to think about it for a second. And that begins the pattern interrupt for me. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. anyway, sorry.
Yep.
I want to throw that in there. Any final thoughts for today, Dana, or anything else that you want to pull out of the chat before we, I know we're way over time now.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a great conversation.
Discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good one. Yeah. Yes. All right, everybody, listen. So we will be back here, well, not here, over there on Dana's channel, Thrive After Abuse, next week, same-ish time, hopefully, most likely, Tuesday around 12:30 p.m. Central Time. And Dana, it's 1:30 your time?
Yep, 1:30 Eastern.
1:30 mm-hmm. Eastern. So we'll see you over there. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and the bell notification for both channels. There will be a link to this, to Dana's channel and my channel on the end screen, which you're probably seeing right now if you're watching later. But those of you who are here now, make sure you type in Thrive After Abuse to look for Dana if you don't already have a connection with her. All right. Thank you so much, Dana. I always enjoy our conversations.
I do too.
And I will see you next week. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Take care. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.